Hello and welcome to the Ogden Arts Festival podcast. I'm your host, Eric Holmes. And this week on the program, I have Josh Perkins from the B-Boy Federation. This was really fun as an outsider to really dig into what the B-Boy community in the Salt Lake area is. The B-Boy Federation gives opportunities to breakers in Utah, competitions, classes, exhibitions, and it's really cool stuff if you ever get to see them live. In this conversation, I asked Josh about why he dances, why he breaks, how he got into it, and why he co-founded the B-Boy Federation. This is an exciting episode, and you guys are all going to learn something about B-Boy culture in Utah. Here is our episode with Josh Perkins. Tell us a little bit kind of about your organization, what it does, and then as well, just start with that for now.
Okay. So the B-Boy Federation is a little more than 6 years old. Right now we've been a nonprofit for the last, I would say, about 2.5, almost 3. And what the Fed really does is try to provide opportunities for kids who are interested in B-boying as a dance and just hip-hop culture in general. So the goals and, you know, the wide-arching range of what the Fed does is always kind of changing and evolving. But from the start, it's always been about providing opportunities for, you know, hip-hop dancers within our community. And so that can be done through events that we would throw. It can be done through performances that we create. It can be done through being hired out for gigs. The umbrella that it provides to our community is just sort of a way for people to, you know, contact an organization and say, like, hey, you know, we are going to represent this thing for this community and try to provide as many opportunities to its participants as possible.
That's cool. So how did you get into so B-boy dancing?
B-boy. So break dancing is your, you know, your quote unquote, like your media term.
Gotcha.
Right? So the original term for the dance is B-boying and B-girling. So first dance of hip hop, anytime someone references hip hop dance, it really should be breaking or b-boying, b-girling in some way, shape, or form. It's grown, it's changed, it's evolved. There's a lot of things that fall under the umbrella of hip-hop dance, but breaking is the first, you know, hip-hop dance. And so the way I got into it is the way a lot of teenage boys, you know, get into it. Is I had a couple dudes that we were in a yearbook class together. Mm-hmm. They did it. It was, you know, 98 99. And it was kind of coming back mainstream media-wise. So obviously, you know, in the 80s, there's this big explosion of hip-hop culture and breakdancing becomes like the thing, you know, that all these young boys in the 80s would do. By the 90s, it's pretty much dead. The media abandons it. It kind of goes underground, but it doesn't go away. And so it sees a bit of a resurgence again in the late 90s as far as like mainstream culture. So there was like Run DMC versus Jason Nevins was a music video that came out. Def Squad remade Rapper's Delight. With Rocksteady Crew, Air Force Crew was in the Run DMC video. And so that, to me, when I saw that, as well as like kind of like the skateboarding, like rollerblading culture, was also involved in like breaking culture at the time. So seeing a lot of that when I was in high school was something where it's like, oh, cool, this is like a thing, you know, and you can be like that guy in your school that does like that thing.
Yeah.
And meet girls. And so, you know, that's like, I mean, you know, that's pretty much how everyone gets into it. It's sort of like a, oh, hey, like, this would be a great thing if I could do this at a stomp and meet girls with, you know, and that's kind of how I started. It's how a lot of people, you know, get started. And then, you know, I just kind of stuck with it. I had a friend named Khan. Khan and his brother Qua both danced in my high school in Logan, of all places, Logan, Utah.
Hey, you know, wherever we're
right? Who'd have thought? So they taught me a few things, and we practiced together. And then Khan was a year older than me. He graduates, goes to Utah State, and you know, comes and finds me one day. And he's like, "Hey, I'm gonna do this Mr. International competition at Utah State." He's like, "I want you to be in the talent, you know, portion with me." And I was like, "All right, cool, man, I'll do it. But I want to learn a new move. You know, I'm gonna learn a new move for this thing." So I went to Mr. Rags, for anyone who remembers Mr. Rags, and bought Pro-Am 98 or 99. I think it was 98. VHS, you know, B-boy tape of this battle in Florida. And it was the first like actual, you know, tape of just breaking that I had ever purchased or ever seen. Got home, watched it, and I was like, whoa, I was completely blown away, right? It was, at the time I was like, you know, breaking is four moves. It's like windmill, footwork, you know, freeze, and two other things. And if you had those, you were pro, and that's all you needed to learn. I saw this tape, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, you know, not only was I blown away, but then I'm like, oh, I'm terrible. Like, I'm awful at it. And then there's all these other things. And so pretty much from that point, I was like, I was hooked, because I was like, oh my gosh, there's so many other things that I can learn. And I learned swipes was a move I actually learned for his talent thing. And from then on, it's been kind of like just life. It's been what I'm all about.
Okay. So is that how you kind of develop your talent? Is you just see a move and then try to learn how to do it? I'm sure there's like tons of YouTube videos and stuff like that. But.
So, I mean, if you're looking at breaking as a dance, it's really important to look at it and approach it as a dance, in which case the music comes first. So when it comes to practicing or learning something, you know, like any other thing, there are, I mean, we call it foundation, and it would be, it's just that, it's foundational elements to the dance. So if you were to break it up as easily as possible, you would say that there's top rock, footwork, power, and freezes. Mm-hmm. And they're four sort of disciplines that, you know, you learn moves within, and that it's like your foundational movement. So you could say like the six step or the Indian step or the windmill or the flare or the swipe as moves that you would learn. They're moves that everybody has to learn that are part of the dance. Now, once you have those basics down, your job is to go out and be creative and to say, you know, oh, I have a six step, but the way I put that six step in my round, the way I add this move, or I have this vision in my head of a move that I can create. So my job is to go out and create a persona and a style and a character, you know, that is completely my own. So, you know, what it means is like, even if you're talking about YouTube right now, right? I may look up a video of you, right? I look up, you know, Eric's B-boy battles from from Germany, right? And I see you do this round. You know, if I then do everything that you do exactly in the round, right? I have your style, your character, and then like your choreography or your movement, essentially, you know, it's biting. So I'm taking the essence of what makes you you, and that's frowned upon. You can't do that. But I can maybe take something that you do and be like, oh, hey, that gave me a really cool idea for a new move, and then I create a new move, and then we sort of I might find you one day and try to call you out or battle you. And it's important to understand that, because the dance is so much about kind of exchanging with other dancers. So I'm not just going to like learn a move and then showcase it like at a play or performance or something like that and have the audience clap. It's meant to be an interactive thing. You know, again, I might see you in my neighborhood and just be like, yo, you know, this kid's got this move. Like it's really tight. You know, I like it. I want to beat him one day. And so I'm going to practice, you know, with the intent of competing against you and battling you and beating you. So the way you develop your moves and your style, you know, you learn foundation, you have to create a unique look, and then you have to go out and sort of like test your art against other dancers.
Okay. So is battling a big part of B-boy culture then? Is it
battling is it like a core part of B-boy culture? Battling is a core part of hip hop culture. In general, you know, and I think, and a lot of the culture grew up around that. A lot of the history that predates hip hop, you know, so the birth of hip hop is 1973, is considered the birth year of hip hop. And so a lot of the things that are happening in the Bronx and in the boroughs of New York prior to that, you have a lot of an explosion of gang culture in the late 60s, you know, and as that sort of evolves and changes, and a lot of those gangs, you know, not die out, but just sort of change and the culture changes around there, you know, it maybe leads away from gang culture, but that idea of like competition amongst like rival gangs sort of turns into competition amongst rival crews through dancing or through DJing or through rapping or through graffiti art. And so the battle as it relates to hip hop is extremely important. The battle as it relates to b-boying is super crucial, because it basically comes down to the idea would be is you and I are from two different crews, right? Yeah. You're this crew from over here, and I'm this crew from over here. You know, we may show up somewhere, and because we're dancing and because it's artistic, it is subjective. So who decides who is the better dancer? You know, and so in that situation, we would battle. You know, I may call you out just because I'm trying to earn respect. You know, I may call you out because I already respect you and I just want to, you know, test myself. I may call you out because maybe you're respected already and I'm trying to kind of come up.
Yeah.
But it basically, you know, becomes this discussion where I think I'm better than you and you think you're better than me, right? And we're going to exchange movements to the music, you know, and basically, you know, in the cipher, which is the circle, whoever can convince you. If I can convince you that you've lost, then I've won.
Gotcha.
And vice versa. Yeah.
Do you generally have a song planned out and like a routine plan, or is there a kind of an improv element?
No.
As well?
So as far as the music goes, the DJ plays what the DJ wants to play. I'm not going to ever know what the DJ is playing in the cypher or in the battle. It's not something where, you know, I'll go up and I'll be like, yo, you know, hey, DJ, play these five songs during my round. Mm-hmm. He's not going to do it. And a lot of that just has to do with, you know, the culture. The DJ is the first element of hip hop. No DJ, no hip hop. But the DJ controls the party. You know, you go to a club, you go to a party, you go to anywhere. The DJ is the one controlling the music and the vibe of that party. So if the DJ is good, I'm going to react to what the DJ is doing. So if, again, if you and I are battling at a house party, I see you and I'm like, yo, I'm going to call this dude out. You know, he was talking crap about me. I'm going to get him.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I'm not going to go to the DJ and be like, yo, play that song that I love so I can battle this guy. DJ's going to be like, no, dude, you're a toy. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to call you out, you know, to whatever's being played. And so the DJ chooses the tracks and is going to play what they play, and you have to dance to whatever the DJ plays. Now, as far as my movement goes, I can have a variety of different things. You can freestyle, which is just going out there and I haven't planned anything and I'm just going to react. I can have a round or a set, which is like choreography that I create start to finish. This 45-second round is all these moves link in this order, and I've practiced it and I've rehearsed it in this way. There's pros and cons to both.
Yeah.
If I freestyle, I have to be thinking ahead really quickly, and a lot of times maybe I'm not going to be as clean. I might fall. I might not do the best thing that I could at that time, showcasing you know, the best elements. If I do a set, on the other hand, it might look really rehearsed. You know, if I see you running the same set over and over and over again, at some point I'm going to be like, yo, and I'm going to start making fun of you doing your set. I'm going to know what set you're going to do at the same time, you know, at this time. And I know how everything's going to look, and it's going to start working against you, because, you know, the other B-boys that you're battling or other people are going to be like, oh, you know, Eric's running this round again. I have a little bit of both for me personally. I'll have called like snippets or like combos or little things where it's like, here's a two or three move combination that I'm going to do. And I can take, you know, two or three of those and link them together, and that makes a round for me. And I might switch it up based on like, for me, it's like a song comes on and I know this song. I know the song, lyrics, everything inside and out. I know the song inside and out. So I'm going to use my round to accentuate that song. You know, because it's going to make everything look better, right? Yeah. If I do everything and it's on every little word and every little beat, you're going to be like, yo, that's so nasty. It looks like his whole round is to that song. A song comes on that I don't know, right? And I'm not really sure, you know, what the song is going to be like as it progresses. If I do the same movements, you're not going to be as impressed, because it's not going to look like it's to the song. So I might have to do something a little bit flashier and more dynamic and explosive, you know, to get you to have a reaction to it. So for me, it's like being able to combine like half sets and little snippets of things together depending on the music and the moment. And I think a lot of people kind of dance that way too.
Cool. So what made you decide to, and are you one of the founders of the B-Boy
Yes, Band? I'm the co-founder. So myself and James Karen co-founded it.
So what made you and James want to form the B-Boy Federation?
So the formation of the Fed, and even the history of the Fed, and a lot of things that we do, I would really love for there to be like this, like, oh, hey, we had this grand vision of how things are going to go. A lot of times, though, you know, a lot of the choices we've made and a lot of things that we've done have happened out of necessity, from the perspective that, like, we either wanted someone else to do something for us, or like we were trying to partner with someone else and then they didn't get it done, so we did it on our own. So the inception of the Fed basically happened where Jimmy's Pyros is B-Boy name. So Pyro and I are part of the same crew, AOD, Angels of Death, from Salt Lake City, and we'd been, you know, battling together and traveling together, you know, since 2004. So around 2007, 2008, the scene kind of dies off. You know, a lot of guys grow up and have kids. There's not as many newer people coming into the scene. So Pyro and I started doing just small events. We called it the X Series was the first event we ever did. And it was like, hey, let's do an exhibition. So it's a con. It's not judged, but it's like I would say take two B-boys from the scene where I'm like, yo, I'd really love to see these two guys go like five rounds, you know, no judges, just to see what they could do against each other. So we'd set that up. The events were free, I think, to start, or they were like, you know, like it's like $5 to get in, super cheap. Around the time we were doing that, we got approached by a league a B-boy mm-hmm. league. So imagine it like junior jazz. You have, you know, crews that pay dues and sign up. Yeah. And then, you know, the winners would get a plane ticket to Arizona for the finals.
Gotcha.
So we talked to them about doing this league, and we're like, we should do it. We sort of built up some buzz within the scene about people who were interested in doing it. And then as it got further on, it became something where we were like, oh, it was going to be really expensive to do, mm-hmm. where we just didn't think our community at the time could, you know, carry the burden financially, right? Yeah. So we don't want these guys to have to pay these amounts or have to do these things, so we're not going to do it. But we'd already told all these people we were going to do this league.
Yeah.
So we were like, screw it. I guess we're doing a league. And yeah. So Pyro and I sat down and we figured out, you know, okay, so these were the parameters of the league that we had over here. So how would we change it? How would we, you know, improve it and make it better for us? And so we made the cost of entry a little bit easier. And instead of giving them a plane ticket to Arizona, we thought, hey, we'll give them a plane ticket to any event in the country that they want to go to. Mm-hmm. If you're from Salt Lake, it's difficult to travel. Vegas is 6 hours, Denver is 8 hours. Those are the two closest scenes, and it's not a short drive, you know, either direction. So by offering a plane ticket, you know, if you're 15, 16, that'd be a great thing to have.
For sure.
So B-Boy Federation was Pyro's name that he came up with. Mm-hmm. And then in 2009, we did our first league. So September 26, 2009, we had our first league event, and that's when we first used the name the B-Boy Federation.
That's cool. So you guys do free classes, mm-hmm. and free workshops and things like that. When did that start, kind of start up and trying to kind of, I guess, recruit more members for
this? Right. So how does it all change and evolve from a thing? So, you know, the league, again, came out of, one, a necessity to do a league because we had already told them we were going to do it, and it also came out of a necessity to bring more kids into the scene, right? Mm-hmm. There weren't a lot of B-boys that were really practicing, and so we're like, hey, we need to bring more people into the scene. So if you follow that thought process, then you'll say, like, you know, one of the core sort of values of the Fed sort of became, like, you know, we would look at the community and say, like, what do we feel like our community needs to improve? What is something mm-hmm. we didn't have as we were learning and coming up, you know, that we feel like they would want? And so workshops and classes sort of was like a natural progression. Yeah. And so we got into doing workshops because through traveling, we knew, you know, sort of like, quote, like, famous B-boys, right? Or,
yeah.
or really well-known or respected B-boys that were like, hey, so-and-so is the homie. Maybe they would be down to come judge an event mm-hmm. for us. And while they're judging, we'll have them do a workshop, right? No one ever comes here. It'd be a great opportunity. And so workshops sort of came out of that. You call it the homie. Hey, you want to fly to Salt Lake? I'll buy your plane ticket. What do you want to teach a workshop? And mm-hmm. and there we go. You know, coming up, there weren't a lot of practice spots. B-boys have these kind of like secret underground, you know, places where it's like, you know, this crew might practice at this rec center, and this crew practices like in the gym at the high school, and this crew practices, you know, in the back of an abandoned restaurant somewhere, which is, I mean, legitimately how it was. We used to go to Up Rock Records. So everyone had these different locations, but they were kind of like a, you know, it's like Fight Club. It's like, if you know about it, you know about it. And if you don't know about it, you don't mm-hmm. know about it. And so once we got to the point where we could, have like an office, you know, so this is probably like 2010, 2011, mm-hmm. where we got an office at the Utah Arts Alliance, and it was like, cool, we'll do an open practice, a free practice.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's not as much instruction that happens, but it's like, hey, every Friday from 7 to 9, anybody wants to practice can come to this place and practice mm-hmm. for free. And, you know, that was like a necessity to help people developing and get better.
Yeah.
You know, so workshops, you know, sort of come with the territory of doing events, and then practices sort of naturally evolve out of, you know, kids needing places to practice when we had more of them in the scene.
What kind of skill levels do you kind of see at these open practice? Do you see, you know, the most beginner of beginners,
right,
and the really advanced ones as well?
Pretty much. Yeah. Like something like an open practice. So if you were to take like a workshop or a class, right, I can mm-hmm. say, you know, this workshop is, you know, all levels or beginner, intermediate. This class mm-hmm. is beginner, intermediate. Open practice is literally just an open room with music playing. So, you know, you have the best guys in the scene who have been dancing 15 years, 20 years, who are there practicing. And then you have, you know, the bottom of the ladder that have been dancing a year or less mm-hmm. who come to practice. And it's kind of, you know, that structure is really important for a couple of different reasons. One is like, break-in is intimidating. as a scene in general, because you're basically, you know, if you were to go to open practice, you know, the mindset is essentially like, oh, I'm practicing to compete against these guys at some point, you know, it's at some point in my mind, I'm going to compete. It's kind of the thought that you want to have. Not everybody does it, you know, but you know, the mentality you should probably take into it. At some point I'm going to compete. So you're basically in this room. There's a bunch of guys who can fly. I mean, literally like flying around the room, you know, tossing physics and gravity and all these, you know, common sense things to the side, you know, and then you're over here trying to figure out how to handstand, you know, and so it's very intimidating, but that's necessary at the same time because, again, getting back to the idea of it being artistic and subjective, it basically comes down to, like, again, like I said, can you convince me that I've lost? And so you have to have that sort of personal confidence in yourself that what you're working on is good and that you like it. I like the dance that I'm doing and the art that I'm portraying. So, you know, open practice with everyone is kind of important so that you're not, you know what I mean, training wheels, right? You're not sequestered and then like, oh, like Eric gets to play in this playpen where it's super safe and all the corners around it. And then, you know, and then you come over here and it's like, oh my gosh, like it's, you know, there's like a culture shock if you are sort of like sequestered away that way. What you'll see that's really cool is, as intimidating as the scene can be, it's also very welcoming and sort of like, if I see you coming to practice and you're off in the corner doing your thing and you're just trying to get better, and you know, I'll respect you for that. I'm not gonna be like, oh, Eric's the dopest b-boy ever, right? But I might be like, yo, this dude comes to practice every week, you know, and is grinding out and he's trying to like get better and come up and do his thing. I'll respect him for that. You know, and so you'll get to talk to those people and you'll get to meet those people. And it's really cool to go to a battle and you'll see like a 10-year-old kid come to a battle and he'll battle a 25-year-old guy, you know, and the people that are spectating will be like, oh my gosh, it's this kid. And what are you doing out there, kid? Don't do it. You know, the kid will have no fear because he's come up around those people. He's used to that environment. You know, you'll also see the 25-year-old guy go super hard against this little kid, right? And then people will be like, what are you doing, dude? He's like a 10-year-old kid. Don't hold back. And, you know, when you're talking about the sense of respect, it's, we don't hold back against the younger kids because the younger kids aren't holding back against us. This 10-year-old kid's going as hard as he can against me. It would be disrespectful for me to be, like, making fun of him or not going hard against him, in my opinion. So, you know, you have this like intimidating barrier to entry, I guess. But then if you do the work and you come up in it, it is a super welcoming, very warm and loving community that you can grow up in and sort of adapt to that, that environment.
That's cool. So, what would you say is the most important attribute for someone to be a good b-boy or b-girl?
Creativity and dedication. If you were to pick the two, anything else is overcomable, right? So you may run into someone who's like, I'm too short, I'm too tall, I'm too heavy, I'm too skinny, I'm not musically inclined, I'm not this, I'm not that. I've seen overweight b-boys. I've seen short, tall. One of the best b-boys from the 90s is a guy named Cujo, who is like 99% deaf. He is like completely deaf in one ear and like 90% deaf in the other ear. So deaf. This here's a dancer. Here's a professional, iconic, legendary dancer who can't hear. You know, but he adapts to it. He can feel the rhythm of the music in his body, you know, and he's incredible. He's iconic. I've seen b-boys with one leg. You know, I've seen b-boys with physical disabilities where they can't use their legs at all and they find a way to adapt. So if you are dedicated to it and, you know, and you believe in yourself and you are creative, you know, again, it's artistic, you know, this person again might be flying around the room cause he's crazy physical and he's crazy strong, right? I'm not going to do that, but I might find a way to be extremely musical, right? Or come up with a movement or a look, you know, where no one's ever seen that before. And then if you're comparing art, you know, it's a tool for me in that way. I don't have to be as athletic as this person. I can be more creative than the other person, and that's something that was really attractive about it to me from the beginning.
No, for sure. That seems like a really inclusive group. It's good to know that it's not like NBA basketball.
Right.
It's not where you have to have this natural attribute to be good at it. So I want to kind of talk, we've been talking a little bit about, you know, b-boying in general and the Fed. I want to, what kind of inspires you, you know, you're like you said, you're contemplating a new move, or you're coming up with, you know, you got a routine for the song that you're doing.
Right.
What are your inspirations? What do you draw from in order to make?
There's a few different things, and I think it changes throughout like your career, right?
Yeah.
when you're first starting out and you're young, your inspiration is be extremely flashy and extremely physical, right? I want to be that guy that's like on, you know, one pinky spinning and double back flipping through the air, you know, when I'm 19. One, because I never get hurt, and two, because that's what I'm trying to,
yeah,
to sort of portray, right, is that style. So I'm drawing inspiration from that. As you get older, it changes. The point where I'm at in my career right now, inspiration for me can come from like getting out of my own box that I've created for myself, right? Mm-hmm. So over 16 and a half years of dancing, I have a style, I have a look, I have things that, yeah, I go to, I have muscle memory moves that I do. So I might be like, hey, you know, I want to try and get out of that. So my inspiration is I'm going to lay on my back and I'm going to go like, how would I normally get out of this, or how would I normally get from A to B, and then try and do something different. So okay, just trying to sort of reinvent yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take influences from other dance styles. So mm-hmm. popping as a dance style, for example, it's a lot about like hits and isolations and very robotic, yeah, precise movements. I love popping.
Yeah.
So I might see someone do a popping move and be like, yo, how can I turn that into like a b-boy move?
Yeah.
And create something from there. B-boys in the past have taken inspiration from like martial arts movies and a lot of different, you know, other artistic mediums that you can pull from. But for me, it's about, you know, how can I sort of reinvent myself each time? How can I, you know, adapt some other dance style that I like? How can I, you know, just sort of do something creative? So I had a round that I was working on once where the foot movements that I were mm-hmm. making spelled out the word Josh.
Yeah.
You know, and so for me, it was just like, hey, this will be fun. I'll just spell Josh. Yeah. No one's going to look at it and no one's going to know what it is, you know, but it was like at the time I was like, yeah, it'd be kind of cool. I bet I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so just trying to find just different places, I guess, to pull inspiration. And then, you know, it's inspiring at this point, honestly, just to be able to keep going. So I'm 34.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny, but a lot of the inspiration just comes from like, you know, you look at all these kids and you're like, these damn kids, you know,
yeah.
Kids are, they're so much better than I was at their age, and they keep uh-huh. getting better. And so a lot of times it's inspiring to keep going just so that you can look like you're dope in front of them for as long as possible until they eventually yeah. overtake you and supplant you, and then, you know, can do everything you can do 10 times better.
Yeah.
So pure, you know, arrogance and ego.
Yeah.
Can keep you going.
Well, that's good, man. So why do you dance versus, like, you talked to kind of what got you into it.
Right.
Like, why dance over why, some like, other yeah, art?
Why, what's know? The point? So when I was growing up, I played soccer mm-hmm. as a sport, you know, and I played it in college for a minute. Mm-hmm. I used to rollerblade when it was, like, cool.
Yeah.
you know, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And breaking became so attractive to me because I like the athleticism of it, but I like the idea that what made a b-boy or b-girl good came down to how creative you are, not how physical you are.
Gotcha.
You know, if you're a rollerblader, skateboarder, BMX biker, snowboarder, you know, two spins better than one spin, three spins better than two spins, exactly. two flips better than one flip, higher better than lower.
Mm-hmm.
And breaking, it was like, dude, I could be this guy that comes up with this one little movement, you know, on this part of the song. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, or I can be the guy that comes up with a move to a part of the song that you weren't listening to before, you know. And you can have that moment where you're like, damn, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
You know, and it that was, like, really fun for me. Is I was like, cool, I don't have to do, you know, 40 spins and 100 flips. I can mm-hmm. just be really creative. And that made it really attractive to me. And then so once you kind of progress at that point, and I got, you know, I was like, won a couple battles and learned a couple moves, and, you know, it becomes so addicting that it really just became kind of part of my life. It mm-hmm. combined something that I was really into, which was being really artistic, you know, as well as being like physical, as well as being like aggressive mm-hmm. and competitive. And it did a lot to like reinforce like self-confidence, you know, and this idea that like I can go to work and hate my job, but it doesn't matter because I can headspin and my boss can't headspin. So whatever, yeah. you know, like, you know, it's one of those things that helps. Or when I was going to school, you know, it's like, man, I hate school. You know, I'm at a roadblock, or I'm at this impasse where you know, I don't know what to do and I'm totally stuck, but I can go to practice and learn something new. And so I have this instant gratification of being mm-hmm. able to learn a new move at practice today and then go home and be like, cool, now I have the energy to focus on this other thing.
Okay.
And then when it came to teaching, I actually don't like teaching. I hate teaching break-in classes. Yeah, I teach a lot of them now, and I'm teaching them more, and I'm learning to like it more. But traditionally, I don't like teaching because the nature of break-in is very much like, you know, when I came up, it was like, hey, dog, here's a few moves. Like, I don't know, don't bother me. Go learn your own stuff. Uh-huh. And then the community at the time, we didn't have a lot of, like, veterans and OGs who would be like, yo, hey, you know, here's how you flare. Let me show you how to do this thing. So we all had to learn it on our own. So when it comes to teaching, you know, I kind of have this mentality of, like, yo, I'll teach you, like, you can come to, like, a class and I'll teach you a few things, and if you don't go practice it, I'm not going to, like, chase you down and try to teach you more stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically like, hey, here's a 6-step, learn it and come see me, and then I'll teach you something else. You know, hey, here's windmill, learn it and I'll come teach you something else.
Yeah.
So that mentality makes it kind of hard to teach because not everybody is willing to practice it.
Yeah.
And so break-in and even in hip-hop in general is something where, like, it's for anyone. Anyone can do it, but not everyone can do it. Because if you're not going to, again, be dedicated to it, then you're not going to see the progress. And then come to me and be like, oh, well, you know, why can't I headspin? I'll be like, oh, well, did you practice? And you'd be like, no, I didn't. I'm going to be like, well, then there's not, you know, there's no, like, you know, achievement. There's no code or anything that you can unlock outside of just, like, you know, just getting out there and doing it.
So what have you seen the B-Boy Federation and just B-Boying in general do for the, you know, the people in the B-Boy Federation?
So, I mean, break-in, it's one of those things where we kind of realized it over time, and it's something I've become really appreciative of it for. And I kind of talked about a second ago where it's like building self-confidence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think historically in the past, people relate break-in to, like, hood kids, you know, where it's like, oh, it's these, like, broke hood kids, and they're, like, breaking kicks them out of gangs. And, like, it's kind of true. And it very much was true at a certain point in time. For Salt Lake's community specifically, it has the biggest effect on, you know, middle class kids from either single parent households or just like middle class, upper middle class households, because, you know, these aren't kids that are not hungry.
Yeah.
You know, they don't need food or shelter, or they don't, you know, but a lot of them don't have a lot of support from their families.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if you're an Asian kid from an Asian family, it can be very, very strict. You know, very intense sort of family situation. If you're from a single parent household, a lot of times it's really rough because your mother or father is working to support the family. So you don't necessarily get the nurturing or the reinforcement that you feel like you want. And a lot of times they get overlooked because, again, they're not hungry. They're not, you know, destitute kids. And so when those kids get involved in something like break-in or popping or house or New Jack or DJing or, you know, any other thing that they can get involved in, because you have to spend so much time practicing and because, you know, you have to dedicate yourself to it, they have to put in the work. But because the community is based on sort of celebrating your personal achievements, you know, you practice, you win a battle. Someone goes, oh, hey, cool, congrats for winning that battle. You see this direct sort of like reward for what you've been working on. It does a lot for their self-confidence. And there's tons of kids in our community that have, you know, started out as really introverted and shy kids who are now, you know, they're not super outgoing, but they have, you know, a good air of confidence about them. So personally, it does a lot for them in that way. And hip hop can do a lot for kids in that way. For, you know, dancers who have been in the community longer, something like the Fed or any other organization that's providing, you know, what we're providing, provides opportunities for the dancers, you know, that represent a segment of dance that is often marginalized or overlooked, right? If you want to look up dance studios, ballet, jazz, tap, modern, there's a million of them. Hip-hop choreography, quote-unquote, can be taught anywhere. If you are a b-boy, if you are a popper, new jack dancer, house dancer, locker, one, you don't have a pillar, you know, or a foundation type place that you can go to.
Yeah, they don't have a college degree.
No, you don't. You don't have a college degree for break-in, right? But look at how many films and movies and TV shows are using break-in. Look at how many dance performances or, you know, studios will teach, you know, break dancing, or they'll want to use a move from something like that from, you know, the dance in their performance, but they don't always hire, you know, dancers like us to do it, you know, and there's lots of examples of it where, you know, I've been to all kinds of performances where it's like, oh, cool, like, that's cool, you took, you know, a modern dancer and you try to teach him a windmill so that he could break dance in this performance for you, right? Versus coming to me and just hiring a b-boy to come and do this windmill for you and pay me a respectable wage, or, you know, give me at least the credibility of standing on the same level with you. And so, you know, the Fed works really hard and will continue to work hard at sort of, you know, putting us on equal standing with traditional dance and traditional art forms, is saying like, hey, you know, we deserve this respect. Like, we work just as hard. We're just as accomplished. You know, appreciate, quotation fingers, you know, what we do. But if you really appreciated and respected us, then you need to hold us up to the same standard that you guys are at.
Sure. What makes a good dance, or, you know, I guess just what makes it good?
What makes it good?
Because, I mean, you can, like I said, you kind of talked about it a little bit. You can go out there and you can do all the moves in this YouTube video, but that doesn't necessarily make
you good, right? Mm-hmm. It's super rough. And I mean, and again, you know, if you refer it to art, it's like, what makes good art, right? Yeah, you and I could go to a gallery and I'll be like, oh, this painting is way awesome. And you're like, what the hell is this? I don't even know. I'm not going to pay $6,000 for that. That's stupid, right? Or we could go to a dance piece and I'll be like, oh, I'm so inspired and moved. And you could be like, you know, huh? Like, what? Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, sorry, I fell asleep halfway through. Mm-hmm. So with breaking, you know, it's kind of the same thing. Like, there, you know, there are like moments where you may go somewhere and you may be like, oh, pfft, that's a b-boy, that's a b-girl, like hands down. And there's it's hard to, you know, qualify why they're that. You know, generally speaking, what makes a b-boy or a b-girl good is going to be someone who understands the foundation, understands the music, is sort of creative with their movement. They should look effortless. You know, this is as a dancer, what I'm doing is the song will come on and I'm personifying the song through my movement. So it should look like everything I'm doing is meant to be done that way, or like the song is sort of guiding me and telling me what to do. You know, those who can do that with, you know, creativity, and who can be surprising, who can be, you know, have a look and a swagger and a style and a character that just kind of makes you smile or makes you like envious, or just makes you have an emotional reaction to them, tend to be the ones that are held up as being like a good dancer.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about what you guys have coming out in the near future. I'm going to try to have this out on Thursday if I can.
Sweet.
So,
what do we have coming up in the future? So over the next, probably 3 months, it's going to be super busy for us. So obviously we have, Ogden Arts Festival coming up, which is gonna be really cool. It'll be our first time there. And we're probably going to do, sort of a little demonstration. We have a program that we do where it's kind of like, you know, sort of showing the Top Rock Footwork Power Freeze elements and how they relate to break-in, combining them together, so the crowd that's watching gets a little bit of education combined with the show. There'll be some performance aspects to it, and we may even do something not just break in we might bring some other dancers out too and try to have like a fun cypher and just make it a really interactive, you know, entertaining slash educational experience.
Sure.
Also coming up at the end of April, actually, we will be doing a little invitational battle at FitCon. Which is happening in Salt Lake. So you just go to FitCon like you normally would go to the convention, and then we'll be battling there on Saturday. Cool. But we actually have two events coming up this summer that are a big deal for us. One will be May 28th in Salt Lake City. And it'll be, so instead of doing our league as a 3-month event, we're going to do it as just kind of a one-off event this year. But in the past, it's only been open to Utah crews. This year, we're actually going to bring out 4 sort of up-and-coming crews from other states, Colorado and Las Vegas or Nevada, and sort of put them in a top 8 with 4 invited upcoming crews from Salt Lake.
Cool.
So it'll be the first time out-of-state crews have been allowed to compete in the league and potentially win. So that'll be really exciting to do May 28th. And then July 8th through the 9th, we are doing a stage production called They Reminisce. So the last 2 years, They Reminisce has been about the story of hip-hop and its dances, covering, you know, the 70s origin era, the 90s golden era, and then the modern era. And we go through kind of how it's changed and grown and evolved. This year we have a new show. So we're going to do a new story. We actually are going to follow a crew called Salt City Rockers. And we're going to follow this crew through the 80s and the 90s. And we're going to follow them sort of through the explosion you know, of dance films and media attention on hip hop in the 80s, sort of its abandonment and a separation of hip hop. Part of it goes commercial, part of it goes kind of underground in the 90s, and just a lot of the conflicts and, you know, and traumas and successes that happen with this crew over that 20-year period. So we're really excited to do that. We just started working, getting production going, and rehearsals and everything is starting on that. So that'll be that second, next first or second week of July, 8th and 9th. So we're excited about that.
Cool. All right. What about open practices? When are those, and how often do you hold them?
So open practices are every Friday at the Utah Arts Alliance. It's 663 West, 100 South in Salt Lake City. It's from 7 to 9. Like I said, there's no instruction, but anyone is welcome to come. It's always free. Mm-hmm. We're usually there later than 9. Anyway, this Friday, actually, we're going to be doing it outside. So since the weather will be super nice, sort of like a once a month thing, we try to do an event called The Jam, which is we have a DJ playing music. We have a section of wall at the Art Alliance that we can paint on. So you can come and, you know, spray paint the wall, dance in the circle, and just have a nice little, it's free as well, just entertaining time outside. But normally practice is every Friday. And then we post it on our Facebook page or on the website. It's bboyfed.com. If something changes or we go out of town for an event, we'll usually post if practice is canceled, but it stays pretty consistent.
Cool. All right. Well, it was really enlightening for me. You know,
cool.
Like I said, coming in as a complete outsider, it was really interesting kind of learning kind of the history and then, you know, a little bit about the b-boy scene in Utah.
Cool.
Like I said, thanks so much for carving out some time, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, of
really
course.
Appreciate it.
Anytime.
Say goodbye to the listeners.
Goodbye. Thanks for having me, and we'll see you guys at the Ogden Arts Festival, hopefully.
Had so much fun talking with Josh about dancing and the B-Boy Federation. Please go and support them. Check them out on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Just search up the B-Boy Fed, and you should be able to find them fairly soon. They post great videos, and you can keep up on all of their events coming up. The B-Boy Federation will be performing on Sunday at the Ogden Arts Festival, June 12th. Please make sure you be there. Follow the Ogden Arts Festival on Facebook. We have announced our artists and performers for both Saturday and Sunday. Remember, this Saturday the 9th at Brewski's, DJ Juggy will be performing as part of the Ogden Arts Festival music series. It's going to be great fun. Go out and bring some friends. If you have any comments, questions, or you just want to interact with me, you can follow me on Twitter at @Oaf_Eric or Instagram at @OafEric. Thank you so much for supporting the Ogden Arts Festival podcast. Please share us with some friends. Rate the podcast on the podcatcher of your choice. Give us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate it and help get more people listening to the show and hearing from these great artists. Once again, we appreciate you listening to the Ogden Arts Festival podcast. The Ogden Arts Festival, where we grow art.